Hey friends, Katie here. I am so grateful that you make the time to listen to Proof to Product. To show my appreciation, we are releasing 4 new podcast episodes this week. I hope you enjoy them as you're relaxing, traveling, or maybe working. But to all of our friends in the United States, I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday surrounded by loved ones. Thank you for the support you give to me and this podcast. I truly appreciate it. So enjoy these episodes. We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to another episode of Proof to Product. Today, I'm interviewing Samantha Barsky of Notify. Since 2010, Samantha has combined her love of travel, photography, and entrepreneurship into making paper and textile goods. She has had success growing her business through a wide range of sales channels, including Etsy, craft shows, her own website, as well as licensing and collaborations. On today's episode, Samantha talks about sourcing new partners for manufacturing and how tough it is, leveraging passive income streams, and the importance of starting small when branching into new products. Hey, Samantha, I'm excited to sit down with you today. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So I'd love to know the catalyst for starting Notify for you. You have such a rich background in this product world. When did you know that you wanted to be an entrepreneur?
I probably knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur when I was like 7. And I would actually, interestingly enough, one of my really good friends when I was 7 was Josie Marin of Josie Marin Cosmetics. And we used to work in the bathroom at our local Mexican restaurant, and we would help ladies in the bathroom, and we would ask for tips. We would give them the paper towels and, you know, to clean down the sink and everything. And that was our little entrepreneurial business. And now, you know, she's obviously extremely successful, and I'm making do. Yeah.
No, you're successful too. Don't sell yourself short. But what were you doing in this world before you jumped into entrepreneurship? I know you had an advertising background. Is that correct?
Yes. So I started out as a art director in advertising, worked for a bunch of different agencies in San Francisco, and just really, you know, was on track, wanted to be a creative director. And that was sort of like the life goal. And as what happens for a lot of us is either we, you know, find out that's not for us, or in my case was I just had a string of sort of annoying male bosses and was like, I'm done with this. And had on the side always been like making cards and making gifts and playing around with different photographs. And my original degree is in photography and digital media. And then I got a portfolio certificate through Miami Ad School. And that's how I got into advertising. But yeah, I just really, you know, was like, I'm done. I'm done working for other people. I'm going to try this stationery thing, see what happens. I joined Etsy kind of at the very beginning when they first were doing it. And I had a lot of like farm collections and different cards that I was making from my family's farms in Michigan and just travels and things I had done, and started out that way.
Let's talk about your products a little bit. You have traveled pretty extensively and you do have the background in photography. How has travel and your photography inspired the products that you make? Tell everybody a little bit about the types of products you make and the design elements of it.
Sure. So initially the idea for Notify, based off the name, was to make sort of little notes and like gift tags and things. But I did have all these photographs. So I've traveled all over the world on a program called Semester at Sea, and then just with my parents traveling Europe and Australia and other places, and then obviously more lately, the United States. So my products are based off all my original photographs. I do city collections now, but I'm sort of starting to branch out a bit into more, you know, maybe national park collections or oceans or mountains, that sort of thing. So doing more regional and geographical spots. But yeah, it was all just like I had these photographs. I loved manipulating them or trying different things with them. I was very, very inspired by rubber stamps. But I thought sitting there hand stamping every single card would be really annoying. So
That would be difficult to scale.
Yes. So I found a way, you know, through playing around with my printers and stuff in order to be able to print on cardstock and make greeting cards.
Very cool. You've dabbled in a variety of product offerings over the years. Like, you've done some textile stuff and some cards. You know, you've done things outside of just the paper world. How do you decide what to pursue and which ideas to maybe drop before you get started?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, obviously, paper is and was still my first love. I did a whole ton of collage work and things when I was younger, but wanted to branch out a bit in trying to, you know, once I started doing wholesale, it was like, oh, you know, there's all these home goods stores or different places, more luxury type spots that maybe I want to sell my stuff. And so that's when the more gifty type items came about. The tea towels that I sell are surprisingly the largest seller by 3 or 4 times any of my other products. So
that's great.
Those, you know, I just make sure to do a lot of. And then the pillows came about because I wanted to do more textiles, but I wanted something in a higher price point. Mm-hmm. And I wanted something that, you know, people were using these tea towels and other things in their home. I mean, I had one woman at a Renegade craft show tell me that she made little curtains in her kitchen out of my tea towels.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, well, my goodness, you know, I should start doing something that's a little bit more decorative and that maybe they wouldn't have to do any sewing themselves. So yeah, that's how it started.
Can we talk a little bit more about the pillows and the tea towels? Can we talk about the production end of that a little bit, of how you found the sources you found? And you don't need to reveal their sources, but, you know, can you talk about researching the manufacturers that you work with and deciding who to use for that kind of stuff?
Sure. When I was first interested in making the tea towels, I actually knew that I wanted to screen print them. I went and took a screen printing class and learned how to screen print. And I started, you know, just kind of buy the tea towels from a local spot, mm-hmm. and okay. was starting to make them and thinking, okay, this is clearly not my strong suit. Like, I mean, I can screen print, but I can't do it very fast. I thought about, you know, my apartment in San Francisco and trying to set up some screen printing station. And I thought, this is probably not the best idea. And so I, you know, just started reaching out to different screen printers in San Francisco. And actually at a Renegade, I had one come by my booth and he was just, you know, sort of like advertising his services. And we talked a little bit and chatted after Renegade and decided that we'd give it a go. And it was a great relationship for a long time. And then I moved up to Oregon about a year and a half ago. And so I kind of called around here looking for a local screen printer. And lo and behold, only one of them called me back. It's been a great relationship with him. And so I screen print there. And then with the pillows, my screen printer in San Francisco, I said, you know, I want to make these pillows, but I want them to bleed to the edge. And so I, you know, I need to find somebody who cuts and sews. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, I happen to know someone, you know, he said, they're these really funny Chinese ladies, but they're, you know, they do the work. And so we tried it out and it wasn't the best experience. I mean, it worked for what I needed for the first run, but mm-hmm. it was a lot of like, they don't use email and I can't communicate with them. And so I was having to constantly go there and check on everything. And it became a little frustrating. And then, you know, just so happened that I moved. So mm-hmm. in moving, I kind of called around and Googled and found a woman here in Bend who cuts and sews, and she's great. And we, you know, have formed this relationship and we're actually friends too. And so, you know, she cuts, we bring it over to the screen printer, they print, bring it back, she sews. So it works out really well.
I like that you shared the difficulty finding somebody to help with the pillows, because I think it's important to remind people that you don't always get it right the first time. That sometimes you got to work through a few different print partners or manufacturing partners or whatever it might be. Or maybe it's just the materials you're using. Maybe you used a tea towel at the beginning that wasn't the right weight that you wanted or didn't take the ink as well, screen printing. I don't know. There's a million different ways that things could go unexpectedly. But I think it's important to highlight that because I know that all of us have been in that situation where something we had hoped would go a certain way didn't go as planned. And so I just commend you on like identifying that it wasn't right and shifting. And obviously the move was a catalyst for that too. But the other thing I want to tell you too is that I really liked what you said about you screen printing yourself at first. I think a lot of us, when we're trying out new products, you know, we're going to try the do-it-yourself route just to sample things or see how things go. But it does come a point in your business where there's a tipping point, right? Like, is it worth your time or is it worth the money? And so it sounds like in your case, it was best to outsource it and find somebody else to do it so that you could focus on the design, the photography, and the other aspects of running your business.
Definitely now it's, I look back on that and laugh because I'm like, I couldn't imagine doing thousands and thousands of these tea towels by myself.
Right. Yeah. And even so though, I think we all, you know, we start ourselves, but there comes a point where we need to outsource it and pass it off to somebody else. So it's fun to hear that transitional story in your products. So thank you for that. How has your business evolved over the years? I mean, you've done licensing, you've done some collaborations with other brands. Can you talk about some of those things a little bit?
Sure. I mean, it's sort of funny. I was just listening to one of your podcasts before this with Kimberly from Crone Canary, and I am not the traditional, brand at all. I have not done anything in the traditional route, and I've definitely had some great opportunities. And yeah, some of those, like I've gotten a licensing agreement with my iPhone cases, City Collections on the iPhone cases, and that was definitely not like a lucrative deal, but it was really cool to again be able to branch out into a different product that I couldn't make for sure, and I didn't even know where to begin.
Right.
To start to manufacture those. And it happens to be a really good way of like whipping out my phone to show people, this is what my product is. This is the style of my product. And so it's become a really good sales tool.
Oh, I'm sure.
But yeah. And then the partnership agreement with Target that I had with my pillows came about through a company called Scout Mob. And they're sort of like, I kind of call them like a much more curated Etsy. Mm-hmm. And they recently have sold, and so I'm not quite sure how everything's going to go move forward with them, but they're a really fun site that helps out independent makers from all over the country. And they happen to work out a deal with Target, and I get this call from somebody at Scout Mob, and she says, hey, so Target wants to carry your pillows. And I'm thinking, okay, cool, like this is just going to be, I give them my design and they manufacture them. Yeah. No, that's not at all. They wanted me to, you know, ship them the full pillows with the inserts and everything, you know, exactly the way that I make them. And they were going to pay me my full price, and they were going to put a really cool hang tag with my picture and my story and everything on them. And they've done, these end cap sort of cities, like in five different regions. And so mine were just my Brooklyn Bridge pillows in all of the New York stores. So it was
fun.
It was a really fun project, and it only lasted a year, but it was a really nice, I don't know, it's one of those like things you can put on your resume, so to speak, when you're an indie maker.
It's an impressive thing. I mean, to say you had stuff in Target, and it sounds like a very untraditional route too of them. I mean, most makers don't get their picture and their bio on a hang tag on their products. So I hope that that led to further exposure for you and additional sales outside of just what you were doing in Target.
Yeah. I mean, I think it definitely did. And it just helped me feel, I don't know, you feel legitimate, right? Like you can say your products are in a Target, but definitely not, again, not the most lucrative deal I've had, but still one that I'm very proud of. So.
You should be proud of it. It was pretty fun to see. I saw the pictures online. Okay. Not New York, but I enjoyed seeing it online. So, you know, you mentioned that you have a different type of business or a untraditional business path, I think is how you phrased it. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to invite you on this podcast, because I think you have a very unique story that needs to be heard. I know that you've spent a lot of time working on the retail side of your business, whereas in previous episodes, we've talked with a lot of people about the wholesale side of their business. Would you mind talking about how you've nurtured the retail clients that you work with, meaning your direct-to-consumer clients, through Etsy, through your online shop? And you also have done craft shows in the past. Do you mind talking about all that a little bit?
Yeah, so I think craft shows is where it started, really. In 2010, that year that I decided I was going to do this full-time, I think I did 40 craft shows in 1 year, most of them in one summer.
Okay, can I pick my jaw up off the floor? That is incredible. 40?
Yeah. That's so I don't even know what I did or why I did it. But yeah, they were mainly just in the Bay Area. And I kind of, it was funny because I had a Mini Cooper at the time and I would literally just pack all my stuff in the Mini Cooper and I would drive it around.
Yeah.
And I lived in an apartment in San Francisco too. And so after every single show, no matter what time it was, I'd have to come home and I would have to unload everything. Because I parked on the street, and if I had to leave my car, I would get broken into. So yeah. I would, you know, midnight or whatever, I'd be hauling all my stuff up to my apartment. And, but yeah, wow. It was, I think I was really buff that summer.
Yeah, I'd say so. How, I assume too that you established some pretty like streamlined systems after doing 40 shows. You knew how to like what you needed, how much product you needed, how your display was going to go.
I did. I mean, a lot of it I did as a learning experience. So finding out which shows were the best and which ones weren't and that sort of thing, which of course, you know, you can never really know because it changes from year to year and day to day. But I definitely, you know, yes, streamlined everything. And then, you know, so I got sort of like a following, if you will. And this was mainly, like I said, in San Francisco. I think at that point, I really only had the San Francisco collection. And I was thinking forward to other cities and how I would kind of take the show on the road, which then I did. I went out to New York and Austin and other places. So I kind of followed the Renegade circuit a bit. But yeah, I mean, that was a way in which I could just get the best feedback possible. I mean, shows to this day, I still don't obviously do that many. But I do think that they're the best way to get direct feedback. And even if your customer doesn't even comment, you're still watching where they're looking or what they're touching or picking up or, you know, what they're drawn to. And so it's just such a good way to know exactly what your customer's into and who your customer is. I mean, you're seeing these people constantly flowing through and, you know, so you can get an idea in your head of who they are, what they look like and what they're into.
Was that ever surprising to you to see who went and picked up your cards or your product?
Definitely. I still have a hard time figuring out my demographic because I think the age ranges and, you know, male, female, all those different things. I mean, I think there's, you know, a good range of who my customer is. But yeah, there's a whole lot of people that are drawn to one thing or another. And then, you know, and that still surprises me even on the sort of website side. So like I have an Etsy shop, I have my own website, and then I sell, I used to sell on a couple of the drop shipping sites, but now it's just Scout Mob. And, you know, I ship all over the country. I'm shipping a Golden Gate Bridge print to somebody in Kentucky because they got engaged on the bridge or, you know, all different kind of things. And I've given up trying to figure out why I'm sending one thing to one place, but I'm still fascinated by it. And yeah, so I think that that's really helped the brand. Though, you know, the Etsy thing is interesting because I've even on, you know, our Facebook page in the group, people were just discussing like how a lot of Etsy sales have dropped for them and mine have catapulted. And I don't know why. I really haven't figured it out. My year over year growth is really good. And
that's great.
I don't know. I can only think it's because I'm just adding more cities.
Mm-hmm.
I've done, you know, all the tweaks that they tell you to do with your tags and your titles and all that stuff. But I don't think I've done much more than a lot of other people. So
it could also be your longevity. I mean, you've been on Etsy now for 7 years. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, in this iteration, I was on it even before that, but yeah.
Yeah.
So
cool. So speaking of your Etsy site and your own website, something a lot of people struggle with is where to direct people to when they have multiple platforms that they're selling on. What is your strategy when you're talking about your products on social media or elsewhere, or your email list or whatever? Where do you push them? Do you push them to your own shop or do you push them at Etsy?
The majority of the time I push them to my own shop. I just think it's a cleaner, easier experience, though I do talk about, you know, I'm also on Etsy, but I sometimes run coupon codes or specials or things like that, and I'll direct them to Etsy that way. Mm-hmm. Somehow I've found that people just are kind of, I don't know, they're more comfortable, I guess, with Etsy. So they seem to use the coupon codes more there, but I'm not sure. Okay.
Do you find it challenging to manage two stores, or do you feel that it's a necessity?
I definitely think it's a necessity. You know, in the very beginning, I got magazine features and stores through Etsy. And now with Etsy Wholesale, you know, I get more stores that way too. And so, yeah, just for exposure, I have everything on Etsy as well as on my website. I don't, I just think it's what you got to do. I mean, there's traffic there. Why not?
Yeah. I think it's kind of like what people talk about too when they say, be careful of using other platforms like Instagram or Facebook or even Etsy for connecting with your people. Like, you still want to have your own shop to direct them to because that's under your control. But like you said, you've been on Etsy for a long time. You have the traffic. You've had year-over-year growth there. Like, there's no reason to necessarily shut it down for you. Have you been hearing in your circles that people are closing their Etsy shop or moving away from it to just do their own shop?
I think people are just definitely not spending as much time. Whether or not they're closing their shop, I don't know that they are, but I think they're just not, you know, spending as much. I don't really spend that much time maintaining it. I mean, it's a pretty like set thing. I do spend time looking at the stats. So I'd like to see what people are looking at, or if I launch something and I've posted it, you know, on social media, I like to check the stats to see if people actually went there and looked at it or something. Right. But again, because I'm not doing as many shows, I'm not getting that immediate feedback. And so stats to me, I'm not even like a math person, but I do like to look at the stats and figure it out and see if I can tell what's trending.
So can we talk about that a little bit more? What in particular are you looking at? Are you looking at your demographics? Are you looking at your sales data? Everything?
Yeah, like on Etsy, I'm just trying to see what listings are looking at. I want to see what to buyers, you know, on Etsy, what do they want? And, you know, it's typically sort of in the same range of products for different cities. And then, though this year I launched some political postcards, and those are good. those are always a big hit with the Etsy folk. But then, like in the Google Analytics, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely tracking like the geographics. Where are those people coming from? Because I want to know, you know, I just launched like, you know, Chicago collection. Are the people that are visiting my site, are they from Chicago, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm checking. And then, yeah, I check kind of like if I got a whole lot of traffic one day, like what that source was, you know, who did somebody write something about me or post something about me? And so where'd that come from?
I've talked to a few clients where they get a big uptick in orders and they're not sure where they came from. Right. And you know, have you ever had that situation where it was, you know, a press article or something and it was kind of an unexpected burst of orders?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I had a Valentine's Day sort of, I was in a roundup for something like Daily Candy or something years ago. For some of you younger folk, you probably don't even know what Daily Candy is, but yeah, I just like all of a sudden got all these orders and I thought, oh my goodness, I hope I have enough.
Actually, it's funny when you were talking about the 40 craft shows that you did in 1 year, my mind immediately went to, God, how would she manage inventory for that? That's a lot of like going out to the shows is a lot of work, but let alone like making sure you had the inventory to take with you and replenish everything that you were selling. So that's funny. Well, what advice do you have for people that are just starting out and wanting to create a product-based business?
Yeah, I think sort of what I was talking about a bit, I like to test the market. So I have, you know, in my product range, I offer sort of a standard like box set of 8 different designs for each city. And then I do a tea towel and a tote bag. And sometimes it has 2 different, you know, like for Chicago, it's Wrigley Field and The Bean. And those are kind of the 2 that I've chosen right now to highlight and do the extra products. And then I'll launch, you know, maybe some coasters or luggage tags or something like that. And I will order in smaller quantities at the beginning just to test them and see. And obviously I'm paying a little bit more. And so my profit margin isn't as great, but again, I don't want to be stuck with a whole lot of extra inventory. And sometimes I cheat and I will Photoshop a design like onto a tote bag or something and see if it, if I get orders, and then I'll get them printed. But I think it's just, you know, again, you're testing the market. And so you want to know before you invest in a whole lot of things, I would, you know, again, start out small. You'll pay a little bit more, but it's worth it in the end, and you'll make the profits back.
You mentioned earlier that you worked with a couple of drop shipping companies. Is that where, like, were you using print on demand services and things for that? Or it was just that you were drop shipping it out and the orders came through the service?
Right. So I would get orders from their platform and then I would ship them.
Okay.
Yeah. So I haven't used the any of the print on demand.
Okay. Because I was going to say, I am talking to a couple of people that want to try different types of products. And as you mentioned, they don't want to invest in a larger quantity of inventory. So they're using services like Printed Mint, which they can, you know, produce a single item and they also help with website images too. And so, you know, if items come in, it's a little bit harder to make your margins there, especially if you're trying to wholesale. But if it's direct to consumer, it's a great way to test different types of products. And then you'd have to drill down on your manufacturing if you wanted to scale up. But yeah, I just wondered if you had experience with that.
I think definitely I've talked to some folks about that when they're starting out. Even a site like Zazzle is an interesting one. I'm a huge proponent of passive income. So mm-hmm. I list some of my stuff on Zazzle in order to, you know, I mean, it's technically like a licensing situation. So
can you talk a little bit more about that? How does it work with Zazzle? You do your art, you put your artwork up and they handle all the production and distribution?
Exactly. So, I mean, really the only time I'm spending is uploading my artwork, which I already have and I've already made. And so I uploaded it onto all of their different products, and then I'll go through and make sure everything looks right on certain products. And then, yeah, you just add some tags and titles and make sure that they're searchable, and they handle everything else. It's all the production, all the shipping, all the customer service. And then you just get a little check every month. And, it works out well. But there's also another side to Zazzle, is that you could, you know, let's say you wanted to test out some tote bags, you order 5, see what happens. And they have sales all the time. So you could, when they're having some 40% off sale or something, order some and you could sell them at your regular retail price and you are making money.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you still only ordered in a small quantity. But yes, then for a larger production, you'd have to figure that out. But testing is good.
Have you found that something like Zazzle, do you ever worry that might dilute your sales in other areas because some of the same artwork is there as well? Or is it different product categories?
Yeah, I've definitely thought about that. Though the most common item I sell on Zazzle are postage stamps.
Oh, okay.
Because of the city collections, people will order in bulk for wedding invitations, save the dates. You know, hey, I'm getting married in New York and I'm adding this New York stamp on my invitation. So obviously I can't offer the postage stamps and make money. So listing them on there. And then, yeah, I mean, occasionally somebody will order maybe some invites or something, but you know, I try to stay away from the custom market. I will do some for people who email me, but you know, why not? I mean, go on Zazzle, do it yourself. Yeah.
Very cool. Can I ask what other types of passive revenue you're working on or you have in place?
Definitely the Zazzle right now, Society 6, and yeah, wanting to, and doing some coaching and teaching. And so, you know, just having sort of the materials already set up and then just using them over and over. So.
Very nice. Cool. It's always interesting. I always find it interesting to hear how people are diversifying their revenue streams because, as you know, it's something that I feel really strongly about. But it's fun to see the different methods and ways that people go about doing that. So awesome. Well, hey, what's next for Notify? What do you got going on the rest of the year that you're working on?
Well, this summer I have an intern from the Oregon State University here. And she actually wants to start her own stationery line. So I'm helping her do that. And she's helping me create all new product photos. Time for a refresh.
Nice. That's
doing great. That in hopes of creating a whole lot of sales tools. I have a hard time creating a catalog because of all the different city collections that I offer. I'm not going to create one large catalog because that's mm-hmm. just a waste. And so I'm working on sort of these little booklets, or I don't know what you want to call them,
like a one pager, or is it actually going to be in booklet format?
It depends. I think for a couple of the cities it'll be a larger one, and mm-hmm. then some will be more just like a one pager. But I have not had a catalog at all this whole time. I've been in business since 2010. I've never used a catalog. I use a hybrid line sheet catalog, mm-hmm. and that's how I have gotten business. But as Kimberly has said from Crow and Canary, a lot of people like to have a catalog. And so has Karina, obviously. And so I, especially for the New York market, have had a really hard time. And I do believe that, yes, they like to have things in hand.
Yeah, they do.
I am working on creating more tangible sales tools for all the different cities. But then, yeah, I hope to launch. I have a national park collection I'd like to launch, and I have a Milwaukee collection that I've just launched the cards, not anything else. And so working on expanding that collection. And then I will be traveling in September to the Grizzly Bear Rainforest. I'm going on a grizzly bear safari.
Wow. That's awesome.
I will be in Canada and I will be taking lots of photos of grizzly bears. So look for a grizzly bear collection to come.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah. And then a Seattle collection too. So,
oh, neat.
Doing more of the Pacific Northwest.
Well, if people want to check out your products and all these fun city collections that you have, where can they find you online?
They can find me at notify.com, but it is spelled note, NOTEIFY.com. And that's my handle across social media also. So look for me. Instagram's probably the biggest spot I like to post on there.
Awesome. And we will be sure to include those links all in the show notes so they can find you quickly and easily. Samantha, thank you so much for coming on today. It was really fun to chat with you and hear how you've grown this business. It's been fun to watch because you've done things your own way and you've really seen success with it. So you're a great example of just trusting your gut and doing the work and reaping the rewards too. So congrats to you.
Thank you. And thanks for creating this awesome community.
Thank you. Okay. Hey friends, a little fun fact for you today. Did you know that most of the brands that we interview here on this podcast are Trade Show Bootcamp alumni? Some of them are speakers and some are friends, but the large majority of the people I've talked to on this podcast are alumni. They have come through and attended our Paper Camp conference or our Paper Camp e-course. And both of these programs are aimed at helping stationery gift companies launch or refine their wholesale program. So we talk about everything from developing their product and ensuring it's ready for wholesale, to launching it to the market and working with sales reps, getting in front of buyers, and all the way down to exhibiting at trade shows, wholesale trade shows, similar to New York Now and the National Stationery Show. We cover it all because we want you to be educated and informed in how you're making decisions for your business. Now, many of you have been asking, when's the next program? When is Paper Camp going to run again? And I'm excited to tell you that we opened registration for our 2018 program. Paper Camp Conference is only going to run once in 2018, and the dates are March 1st and 2nd. second and will be in Los Angeles. Historically, I've run this program twice a year for the last several years, but I'm cooking up some other fun things for the fall, so we are only going to offer Paper Camp in person and live one time in 2018. And if you want to get more information about how the live program compares with our eCourse program, head on over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp, and you can learn more and also grab your seat. Now, I should mention, like all of our Paper Camp conferences, this is an intimate event. We keep the numbers small so that you can get your questions answered and you can have time networking with our speakers as well as the other attendees. So seats are very limited and we sell out every time. And since we're only offering this once next year, I really encourage you to grab your seat if you intend on coming. More information is available at tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.